Merry Christmas. This is Christmas morning at Campbell, California, at the campus of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, and all sorts of other good things like that. We are really in a wonderful place. Yes, and I know what I must do. Okay, our topic today is whatever happens, never happens by itself. Whatever happens, never happens by itself. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, bringing you the thought for today, for Christmas Day. Whatever happens, never happens by itself. Now, we could say that the Christ child was born by accident, that it was just Mary and Joseph on their way over to pay their taxes and stuff like that, and going over there to check things out. And the baby was born. But then a whole lot of other things took place, you know, like the stars in the sky and the wise men and all sorts of people coming around paying attention to the kid and saying, this is no special kid. This is a super special kid. This is not just your son. This is the son of the world, you know. This is a full representation of the Christ. Now, how do they know that? They had no way of knowing it. But what was it that the teachings were that came out of Jesus the Christ? Did he say, hey, you're forgiven? You know, the Christians like to say, he died for your sins. Well, if he died for your sins, what's all this heaven and hell about, you know? Well, anyhow, it's a fascinating thing. And religion is a fascinating thing. And religion should be a money-making thing. It should be something that really makes money for people. Now, you say, Herb, on Christmas Day, the day of the birth of the Christ child, you're talking about commercialism and stuff like that? Well, yes, that's true. This morning, as I was relaxing in my easy chair, surrounded by lovely candles and the pitter-patter of rain on the roof and the fish splashing in the pond outside, I opened up the Money magazine for January 2004. And on page 26 was the most interesting article that just jumped right out at me. The article is entitled, God's Work. Mm. So, let me share it with you. It's quite an interesting approach. Quite an interesting approach. I think you'll find a great deal of enjoyment out of it as I share it with you, because it's a unique approach, very unique. Here we go. Do people toil harder and more productively if they're afraid they might go to hell otherwise? A new study by Harvard economists Robert J. Barrow and Rachelle M. McCleary suggests that they do. Examining data from surveys of religious faith in 59 countries in 1980 and the 1990s, the authors conclude that religious beliefs, most notably beliefs in heaven and hell, can boost the gross national product and can boost the earning power of people very substantially. Still, the study is unlikely to win over many clerics, many of the ministers, that is. For one thing, there is the author's tendency to talk about matters of faith with the same dry, detached, economic lingo that others might use in discussing pig iron production, referring to churches and other houses of worship, for instance, as religion providers. The church is a religion provider. For another, Barrow and McCleary argue that actually, going to church is, economically speaking, a waste of time. Once people accept the notion of heaven and hell, more church attendance simply signifies more resources used up by the religious sector. Nevertheless, they note, brisk competition among, brace yourself, religious providers should produce a better quality religion product. and thus a more satisfying church-going experience for those who don't mind wasting time with God and or his earthly representatives. The godless and the godly alike can find the study outline at nber.org/papers. nber.org/papers. So if you want to know about God's work, if you want to know about the religion providers of the world, go to nber.org/papers. You see, we don't like to think that the church is commercial, but by God, it's commercial. We don't like to think that the minister is commercial, but if he doesn't have his salary, he's not going to stay in the church because he's got a family to feed and he's got a wife to make happy and he's got to have a house to live in, and besides which, they got to have a church building in which to conduct the services and activities. And they're always having fundraising drives. Well, fortunately, the government is nice enough not to charge them any taxes because they think that this is a pacifying activity for humanity. It keeps them on a balanced tack. And that has some bearing and some benefit. But think about it. Think about it. We say here, whatever happens, never happens by itself. Since when has religion turned into such an economic program? Religion has turned into an economic program because the beliefs of people are sort of all taken care of very well. You have all these television shows, The Bishop's Wife and Miracle on 34th Street and all the other lovely things about Santa Claus and about Christmas and so forth. And people read the National Geographic and they see how historically the birthplace of the prophets and the religious leaders is a reality, you know. And they say that these things come from these foundations. Nothing happens by chance. They all develop out of that. And the Jews went around telling their story, word of mouth, until they found a pen and pencil, you know, maybe a computer, and put it down in black and white. And then, as they put it down, they were not always with good proofreaders, and so they had little errors here and there. And the errors, once established, became compounded. And if you can imagine yourself how careless you are, in spelling. Now, can you imagine someone sending me a letter and misspelling my name? I mean, why bother? I'm going to look at that letter and say, that person doesn't really care about me. They didn't even want to spell my name correctly. Now, if they don't want to spell my name correctly, they don't care about me because my name is me, you know. So, in the early days, in the early times when the Hebrews were saying by word of mouth the various books of the Bible that they passed on down and down, that itself was very tenuous. That itself had very many errors in it, you could be sure. And then they started writing it down, and then they'd write it down, and then somebody else would copy that and write that down, and they'd make their mistakes. And then the other people who came along, they'd make their mistakes, until you just have a big book of mistakes. And you say, well, Herb, that does not speak well for religion. That does not speak well for traditional religion or fundamental religion or even spiritual religion, if you want to call it that. No, it doesn't. But what it does do, it says, you know it has a lot of errors in it. You know it is incorrect in many, many ways. And that's not a bad thing, and it's not a good thing. Whatever happens never happens by itself. It goes that way. So along comes this guy 2,000 years ago plus now, and he's a nice guy. He's a real nice guy. Mm-hmm. Well met, friendly, surround himself with all these men and all these women and all these children. He said, let the little children come unto me. He said, you know, that's good. I like everybody. And then he talked to them. He talked to them on the Sermon on the Mount. He talked to them in all these wonderful places. And they came and they saw his miracles and they didn't believe him. And he says, yeah, you're a Messiah. We got Messiahs coming around us, you know, like cutter his pills. And they're just always there. So they don't pay attention to it. You don't pay attention to miracles. You see miracles every single day, and you don't pay attention to them. How can you watch a television show of a television set that's going on in America, in Switzerland, and there's no wires, you know? There's no wires. You're just a battery there, you know? And it picks up out of the sky these pictures. It's a miracle. Mm-hmm. And you don't believe it. That's just everyday stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, little by little, everything becomes everyday stuff. All the things that were miracles at one time are now commonplace. Well, my goodness. You know? What do you want? Okay, so Jesus knew this was all coming. And he was a cool cat. He really understood philosophy. He understood psychology. He understood people. And he had a special track. He had a special inside track to the divine creator of all, the divine reality. And he listened. And that inner soundtrack and said to him, hey, Jesus, they're not listening to you, and they're not listening to anybody else. Why don't you just forget it and go enjoy yourself, be yourself and have fun? And Jesus says, I promised that I'd come and, you know, show these guys the way. I'm the way, the truth, and the light. I'm going to show them the way. And the inner voice says, all right, teach them this. Teach them that within every single creative intelligence in the universe, man, animal, stone, vegetable, anything, you know, is the divine. And all anyone has to do is to listen to the divine within themselves, and then they'll know what to do. And they'll know how to do it, and they'll know where to go and how to think. Now, do you think that there is not a divinity in the carrot, in the cauliflower? The cauliflower has the divinity within it that's saying, this is what a cauliflower should be. This is what a carrot should be. And that's not that. That's just important. And a dog thinks, this is what a dog should be. I should be a playful guy, you know. I'm a pet. My name is P-E-T. You call me all sorts of other names, but I'm a pet. I am something that humans love to take care of, and humans love to pet, and humans love to have around. And then I do other things on the side because I have fun too, you know. But I'm a pet, and it's designed to be a pet. Then you go to a coyote, and you say, come, coyote, let me pet you. And the coyote says, gruff, you know. I don't cotton to anybody, you know. I'm out to get my breakfast or my lunch or my dinner. I'm not here to play games with you guys, you know. Well, coyote, I'll feed you. I'll take care of you. And over a period of time, the wild dog becomes tame. Not instantly, but over a period of time. And as we said here, whatever happens, never happens by itself. It is a trained program. Now, I am a human being, but I'm listening to my divine inside of myself. And the divine inside of me says, hey, enjoy yourself. Have fun. The divine inside of me says, hey, there's nothing you have to do. And then the divine inside of me, contrary to this article here that was in the Money magazine, the divine inside of me says, there's no heaven and there's no hell. You're living in the greatest thing you ever had. This is your body. That's a temple of the living God. That's a temple. That's your heaven, and that's your hell. And if you don't take care of that temple, you're going to go to hell. You're going to have diseases and problems. If you take good care of that temple, you're going to be in heaven, and you're going to be a happy, happy camper. And that's what we all want to be. Now, this is what religion is all about. Religion is not so you can pay the minister so he can tell you all about God, because you got the Bible, theoretically, you can look at it yourself. You can look at all the mistakes yourself and see all the mistakes yourself. And that's why they interpret it all the time, because it's just a bunch of mistakes. And they're trying to figure out what the truth really is. But they don't listen. Jesus said, the truth is, go to your Father within who heareth in secret, your Father will reward you openly. And the reason he said Father is because that's what the teaching of the Jews were, and he was a rabbi, and he was teaching them in the language of their own way. Now, you're raising your children, and you say to your children, now you behave. Bah, 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 bah. Now you behave. Bah, 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 bah. Now you behave, or when your father comes home, I'm going to tell him that you have been disrespectful and have not been behaving. And what is your father going to do? He will tell me to behave. Yes, and what is your father going to do? Well, he'll enforce it. He'll say, you're going to be deprived of certain things, or he'll say, bend over my knee, son. Give me your bottom. Whack, whack. You know, once or twice, not to kill the kid, just to bring home the point that there's punishment when you don't pay attention to the rules. They had another article in this magazine, and it says, 67% of the college graduates in the world go home after graduation from college before they go to their first job. They go back home to their bedroom, to their place in their parents' home, and they live there anywhere from 1 year to until they're 37 years old or older even, you know, as long as they can handle it. And parents should set up a new program. They should say, you pay rent, you do this, you do that. And then if the kid doesn't have a job and can't pay the rent, that's owed. Mm-hmm. And he must pay it later if he can't pay it right then. But the thing is, they must learn the values like that. This is what the article is teaching. Well, now, did Jesus ever go back home? Did he ever suggest that we should go back? He always said, go forth, didn't he? He always said, live as a noble being. He said, turn within for the answers, and the answers will reveal to you whatever it is you need to know. Now, here we have this heaven and hell that keeps people in line. Well, that's the wrong reason. That's the wrong reason to keep in line. You should keep in line because you have an inside track. Now, each of us have an inside track. Now, I am the inside track for Ellen. She doesn't know anything unless she checks with me. I am her God. I am her teacher. I am her all. And she's always checking with me to make sure she's doing it right. And then I say to Ellen, Ellen, I think it's time for you to fly the coop. I think it's time for you to leave the nest and form your own little nest. And you're welcome to talk to me anytime you want. You're welcome to see me anytime you want. You're welcome to be around me anytime you want. But you got to have your own little nest. And you got to start creating your own little world. And so she goes and gets herself a husband, and she gets herself kids, and she gets herself grandkids, and she gets herself all these other things. And then she comes back and says, you know, something's wrong. I'm having a little problem here and there. And I say, what are your values? And she says, I got good values. And I said, if you have good values, you don't have problems. Well, why is that? Well, are you your son's God? Are you your daughter's God? Are you your world's God? Or did you teach them to be God for themselves? Did you teach them to listen within and hear what is the direction they're supposed to go? But you see, we as mentors, teachers, sharers, parents, and that sort of thing, we want to hold on to our children. We want to hold on to our family. We want to have them think we are indispensable to their existence. And instead of just saying, hey, I turn you over to your highest good, the divine in you shows you the way. You're fantastic. This is what Jesus said. He said this to his disciples. He said, my goodness sakes, I told you, go out, preach, teach, and heal, raise the dead, and you can't do it. You come back and play, I can't do it, Daddy. I don't know how to do it. And Jesus said, come on, now let me show you again and again. And finally he says, well, I tell you, I'm still a young buck and I'm still got lots of life ahead of me, but I think I'll take off. I think I'll go and let the Comforter come and show you the way. the comfort of being your own divine inner self. You'll be dependent upon yourself. And so then they started being dependent upon themselves. And they started going out and sharing what words he said. And what was the message of Jesus? Tell me, anybody, if you wish, what was the message of Jesus? One word, four letters. What was the message of Jesus?
Love.
Love! Well, where is heaven and hell in love? Where is telling other people how to live their lives in love? Yeah, love's over there listening, and he's saying, I'm right here. Now, where's the message in that? The message is, go to the divine within yourself. Go to your inner awareness. Tune in. And as I was saying to Gertrude a moment ago, I said, you're all blind as bats, thinking you never see any miracles. And we have more miracles going on, but you can understand them. But can you? Gertrude, tell me how television works. Tell me how they send pictures through the air and how you, in the middle of nowhere with a battery, can pick up those pictures right out of the air, out of the sky. That's a miracle. And the cell phones, aren't they crazy? You are anywhere in the world and they can call you on your cell phone and talk to you. You know, anywhere in the world. You're in the bathroom even, you know. But you're anywhere in the world and they can talk to you. That's a miracle. My goodness, but it's an electronic miracle. It's a modern age miracle, and that's what they call it, and that's what it is. Now, I'm delighted with Herbert Marti. He is such a character. I say to Herbert Marti, Herbert, why don't you say, the miracle of modern science has brought these beautiful substances that we are selling in our Similazan program, and the miracle of modern science and the miracle substances. He says, they won't let us say that. They won't let us say that they are miracle substances, which they are, of course. But they won't let us say that. Now, why won't they let them say that? Because they want everything to sound as though it is technically, logically understood. But who understands it? Who understands it? You don't need to understand. You just use it and live it and are it. Who understood in Jesus' time about the God that Jesus was teaching them? Who understood who that Father was in Jesus' time? Who understood? And who understands it today, 2,000 years later, in our highly technological society, where we have basis and understanding of all these things, and we don't even understand it today. Because do the scientists understand how television works? No, they don't. No, they don't. Because it is certain miraculous things that are taking place. Could a scientist throw something out there? They do things that they haven't the slightest idea they do. The scientific mind makes up the calculator, which can, in an instant, calculate an infinite number of numbers, you know? And if you were to say to the scientists, how does that work? How do you take an idea from the mind of man and build a calculator and have that calculator think faster than the mind of man can think? Well, the calculator doesn't have the limitation the mind of man has. The mind of man says, I cannot think that fast. And it doesn't. But yet the mind of man creates a device that does think that fast and faster. So the mind of man indeed can think that fast, but they have told themselves they cannot think that fast. Now, what is that? Is that a technological condition or is that a mental condition? Is that, as we were saying here, whatever happens never happens by itself. There is always a cause for everything that happens. And there's always an effect for everything that happens. You see, we're living in a fabulous world, in a wonderful world. And imagine the cavemen. They thought they were the top of the art. They just developed the wheel, you know. We have the greatest technological society in the world, you know, with the wheel. And add a couple of thousand years, maybe even a million years or two, and watch what happens. growth in awareness of the genius within them was slow. But then they arrived at a very number of peaks, and we say, but how do they do that when we don't have evidence of it? Though the tectonic plates have moved back and forth over the earth and have completely obliterated so many of the evidences of past civilizations and work, which doesn't matter. Because in an instant, we can move from nothing to everything. And in an instant, poof, we can move back from everything to nothing. Because if we destroy what we call the sources, then we have nothing. If we empower the sources, then we have everything. Now, the sources could be for you, Gertrude, with your television, a battery. But the battery is only so good insofar as it has the device that can gather from the universe the information you want. And it has to have a sender. Now, you logically will be able to say, yeah, well, there's a studio back in Zurich that sends out television stories and sends out television signals, and I'm picking up those signals. And so you believe it. Well, I'm saying to you that within you is this tuning station, and you're tuning in to all the knowledge of the universe, all the experiential attitudes that have ever taken place or ever will take a place, and you're bringing them home for you. And you're using them. But you don't think that you can calculate figures as fast as your computer does it, as fast as your contometer does it, you know? But you do. Now, we want to change our thinking. We want to change our thinking to realize that we have all knowledge within us. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. Whatever we want to call it. And when we do that, then that's the moment we'll be able to say, whatever we want to figure on our calculator, bung, it's there. Whatever knowledge we want to have on our database is there. You know, these are just silly things that we've made up. We've created these things. And we have them intermix all sorts of things wonderfully together. And we just haven't taken credit that we can do that without the instrumentation. Because we built the instrumentation. And we can do everything. We don't need a car to go from here to there. We can just be there. Our consciousness can do it. The Great Pyramids were not built by human beings. They were built by, perhaps humans, but they were built by ideas. People had a concept, and then, tuck, there it was. And remember, everything wants to be logical. Everything wants to be based on logic, and if it's not based on some sort of logic, people will not accept it. And people will not accept something being right in front of them if they don't believe that that could be. And this is how we are. We have right in front of us all of the infinity of the universe available to us to accomplish anything we want to do, and we say it's not there. So, I suggest that we start recognizing whatever happens, never happens by itself. We can always say the law of cause and effect. But whatever happens is mighty wonderful. This is a lovely day. This is Christmas Day. And on this day, we can remember that wonderful being who came out and said, "It is done unto you according to your belief." Go to the Father within, go to the divine mentor, the divine intelligence, the divine wisdom, to your divine self, to your connection. Go to your connection within, and all things will be revealed to you. All things will be open to you. And that's the story of Christmas. Have a wonderful day. I love you. And I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I love you, I love you, I love you.